Good Sunday morning to you. It is 8 minutes now past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. I think, Josh, you said it was 68 degrees.
69, close enough.
Close enough.
Yeah.
So I was out of town. I was out of town this weekend. Went to La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Which is where my career started. Mm. And I went to visit my old boss, Sean Dwyer. And I turned my air off in my house. And it was a hot, it was really
it was steamy.
Oh, yeah. It was real dank, you know, kind of just no air.
Yeah.
Ooh, geez. So anyway, I cranked it. Now I'm freezing up my
That's not ideal.
No, kind of the way it is. You doing all right today?
I can't lie to you. I'm not doing too hot, but it's fine. I'm here. I woke up with like the most pulsating, pressure-filled headache, and I've already had 2 Tylenol and 2 ibuprofen this morning.
How about Excedrin? Take some Excedrin.
I'll have to go get some.
I have 1,000 pills in my purse.
Well, hopefully I can mix those. I don't want to like take too many pills and like I shouldn't have taken all 3 of those different ones. But yeah, I'm better now. It's starting to wane off a little bit. I had some coffee to maybe help with the headache. So,
well, it's a good thing we have doctors that are on the air. If you can ask them.
Yeah.
I wonder if they might say something like hydration.
Yeah, that is true. Water is important.
Water is important. Water is life, some would say.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we are happy to have this week on with us a friend, a former guest, and an all-around good guy, Dr. Andrew Steem, a pulmonary and sleep medicine specialist with interest in sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg for Allina Health. Good morning, Dr. Steem.
Good morning, Susie. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. What would you tell Josh with his headache? Drink water?
Definitely drink water. Definitely drink water.
Dehydration can really do a number on your body, can it?
Absolutely. And most of us are relatively dehydrated. It's funny, there's this trend now to either be super hydrated or dehydrated.
Yeah, that's funny because as I drink a drink of water as you're speaking, that new hydration drink is out. Everybody's going to the store to get those packets of extra hydration beverages, you know?
Yep, no, I very much do. My kids walk around with Monster water bottles all day. I had water fountains growing up, and my kids now just, everywhere they go, they've got their water with them.
Isn't that the truth? Well, thanks for coming on this week. We want to make sure people know they can come on at any time and ask a question of you, and our number, as always, is 651-461-9226. And you have such a wide variety of specialties, you know, each and every one of them could probably take up an hour in terms of, you know, sleep apnea, restless leg, narcolepsy. And narcolepsy is kind of an odd one, isn't it? I think people are a little unsure of that one. Obviously, isn't it that you just fall asleep in the middle of nowhere?
That's a big part of what it is. It's falling asleep without warning, falling asleep without even really being sleepy can be some of the cardinal symptoms of narcolepsy. A lot of reasons people can be tired. And so I've had a fair number of people over attribute their sleepiness to narcolepsy, but it's definitely out there. And I think one of the things that we all forget to do is think about it. People who are coming to us tired, we tend to just assume they're like the rest of us. You know, I don't get enough sleep, or I stay up too late, I get up too early. But there's definitely some mild forms of narcolepsy out there as well that I think get ignored for many years. If you're more tired than you think you should be, you should get checked out.
Yeah, and when you mean checked out, what does that look like for someone that's investigating whether or not they may have a situation they have to deal with?
The first thing is I'd really push. There's a tendency to not take the complaint as seriously, both personally and for healthcare providers, as we probably should. And so if your quality of life is suffering because you're more tired than you think you should be, and you really think you're doing everything right, I am getting enough sleep, I'm sleeping at the right times, I'm not drinking too much alcohol, as examples, but I feel like I can't watch a movie. I feel like I say no to going out because I need to take a nap. At work, I have to go take a nap in the middle of the day. These are some of the things that a typical person doesn't have to do. And so you go to your doc or your provider, and you complain about being tired, and they'll usually do some blood tests and ask some simple questions to try to get to the bottom of it. But if it's unanswered, this is where I would tell people, don't rest on your laurels. Keep looking for an answer. And oftentimes that's when they then would refer you to a sleep specialist like me.
651-461-9226. we kind of have a variety of topics you can jump in on, but right now we're talking about sleep issues, as so many people, I think, Dr. Steam, suffer from, whether it's narcolepsy, whether it's, you know, restless leg or sleep apnea. How does restless leg relate to sleep?
It's one of the interesting diseases that has its own circadian rhythm. It really is worse in the evening. And it's this tendency for your legs to be uncomfortable whenever they're inert. And patients will describe it in very different ways. But any discomfort that is relieved by moving your legs that feels like it's worse in the evening could be restless legs. And so patients will say they're watching TV in the evening and they can't sit still. Or when they're trying to go to bed at night, they can't sit still. And that discomfort in their legs makes it hard to sleep.
And is it just, again, it seems like, how is it? Is it connected to sleep or pulmonary or any other thing? Or is it just a third thing, that another thing that you are specializing in?
It falls into kind of an overlap world between neurologists and sleep specialists, because it many people will report it as an insomnia. I can't fall asleep because my legs are restless. And so that's how it often enters our camp.
That's interesting. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Steam, a pulmonary and sleep medicine specialist with interest in sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg syndrome for Allina Health. And as always, this is your opportunity to jump in and ask a question. 651-461-9226. This texter writes, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea 5 years ago, and I got a machine, but I haven't been back to that doctor since. How often should the machine be replaced, and how often should I be reevaluated for a different pressure setting? That's a good question.
It's a great question. Most insurances will let you get a new machine every 5 years. But it's kind of like saying most of the time you get a new phone every 2 years. That doesn't mean you have to. It just means insurance will often pay their share, although you may have to pay yours. If your CPAP is working just fine, or your machine is working just fine, you certainly can extend its life past that. And so it's an individual choice, but the insurance will often do their part after 5 years. In terms of how often to get checked out, our national society recommends annually that you come in. It's kind of like having a blood pressure or diabetes. Even if things are going well, they do recommend that you come in and get things checked out once a year. And at that visit, your provider will often check the machine, and the machine usually does report on how things are going, how well you're using it, if any of your apnea is creeping back in, and so it'll let us know if we need to make pressure adjustments.
All right, very good. We're going to take our first break. It is 16 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. We're talking to Dr. Andrew Steam with Allina Health about sleep apnea and restless leg and narcolepsy and sleep issues. He is also a pulmonary doctor. We might actually slip in a question about, once again, more bad air coming into the region. But we'll get to more of your texts and questions right after this on News Talk 830-WCCO. And we are back, 7:21 on a Sunday morning, 69 degrees outside, having some bad air coming in about 9 o'clock this morning. We'll have to deal with that once again. Our doctor this week is Andrew Steam from Allina Health, a pulmonary and sleep medicine expert with interest in sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg. And we have a number of text questions, Dr. Steam, as always, around sleep, because a lot of people have issues around sleep. We just mentioned sleep apnea and having the machine. This texter writes, I have no trouble falling asleep, but wake up in the middle of the night and find it difficult to get back to sleep. Should I be checked by a specialist? And that, I think, especially the older you get, I have a lot of friends that have that peculiarity where they wake up at 2 or 3 and can't go back to sleep, and then they're tired the whole next day.
Yeah, no. And it's actually not a peculiarity. It's the way we're supposed to be. Before the light bulb and before the industrial era, when we were able to sleep the way we wanted to sleep, it was normal to sleep about 3 times a day. You would sleep for about 3 to 5 hours often. They would call it the first sleep. You would then be awake for several hours, up to 1 to 3, and then get a second sleep later in the morning. And so that's actually kind of the normal. And then the third sleep would be a nap in the afternoon, usually. And that's the normal pattern to human sleep when kind of left to their own devices. But the light bulb let us stay up awake later. The 9-to-5 work job made us wake up earlier. So most of us compressed our sleep, like the 10 to 6 loosely. But particularly in retirement, we start to see this normal biological rhythm start to re-express itself, and we're unaccustomed to it. It's not the way any of us have spent our life. And so we get that first sleep in, that 3 to 5 hours of sleep, and now we're awake for 1 to 3 hours because that's kind of what our body wants to do. And then we think we need to start our day because, again, that's what we've done most of our life. But it's very normal to experience that. And then what you can do is just take your second sleep later in the morning. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to get all your sleep at once. You just have to try to get all your sleep.
What is all your sleep?
Yeah, for the typical adult, assuming retirement age, it's about 7 to 8 hours is what's the recommended sleep duration. But if you want help compressing your sleep again, there's a number of things that we can do to try to help with that. But the best therapy is something that we call cognitive and behavioral therapy for insomnia. And so it's a combination of techniques and therapies that can help someone fall asleep faster, fall back asleep faster, and stay asleep longer. And when it's compared to medicine, the typical person who does cognitive and behavioral therapy compared to medicine actually gets 40 more minutes of sleep than people who take medicine. And so it's a much better therapy. So, A, if it's not bothering you and you can get your second sleep in, that's fine. B, if you want help, cognitive and behavioral therapy for insomnia, what we call CBTI, is the first-line therapy, and it's very effective.
I know about cognitive behavioral therapy in that it's used for a lot of things in addition to sleep, right? That it can help with therapy with trauma. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it. Can you kind of explain, if no one knows what that is, how it works?
Yeah, the I'm more familiar with it specifically in the context of insomnia.
Sure.
But cognitive and behavioral therapy is a broad toolkit that psychologists will use to apply to multiple problems. And when it's applied specifically to insomnia, a lot of people report a cognitive component as an example. They can't turn off their minds. They wake up, they start thinking, and they can't stop thinking, and they just lie there, and their mind just starts going all over the place. And so part of it is they teach you ways to kind of deal with that I can't stop thinking component. The other is they start to modify your behaviors. So people will often do very understandable things when they have insomnia that actually make the insomnia worse. So if I had a bad night's sleep last night, I might start pounding caffeine today to try to get through the day, but that'll make tonight worse. I may take a nap because I got such poor sleep last night, but that might make tonight worse. I might go to bed early because I knew I had trouble sleeping last night, and so I want to make sure I get all my sleep, but that actually can make the insomnia worse.
Mm.
So these very understandable behaviors actually make things worse. And so they kind of just hit the reset button on your sleep, and it's highly effective therapy, the best one we have.
What about your watch, your smartwatch? I know my watch tells me to stand up. My watch tells me to breathe. My watch asks me how I'm doing. I know it can track your sleep. Is that helpful?
For some people, it is. For some people, it's information overload. I've had more than one patient who's walked into my clinic complaining that their watch tells them they're getting bad sleep, but they feel fine. So don't worry too much about what your watch says. The watch is actually very good for the most part at telling you how much sleep you're getting. That algorithm is pretty good. The depth of sleep algorithm is not that great. And so if your watch is telling you you're not getting enough deep sleep, but you feel fine, I wouldn't overly worry about that. The other one that's very much up and coming, and for instance, the Apple Watch has this, is sleep apnea detection. And the sleep apnea detection on these watches is actually really good. For the most part, if it says you have sleep apnea, you probably have sleep apnea, and you should get it checked out.
All right. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. It is our talk and text line. A texter writes, good morning. How well does the Inspire unit work for people with sleep apnea instead of a CPAP mask and hose? Have they been compared, or what are the differences in the two to the best of your ability?
Yeah, the studies that did the Inspire trial, you had to fail CPAP to get in, and so it is a Plan B. It is not better than CPAP. So if you're using your CPAP well and you feel unrested, Inspire is not going to be better than the CPAP is. So it's better to get things checked out instead of switching therapies. However, if you can't wear your CPAP, or you ultimately don't want to, and you're willing to have an inferior therapy, then it's a very comfortable alternative. It's a very comfortable plan B. Relative to what good CPAP use can do, the Inspire therapy is about a 75% therapy for most people.
Okay.
So it's going to be about 75% of what CPAP can be. But a 75% therapy that you can do is better than a 100% therapy that sits on your bedstand. And so that's the right person. The person that CPAP is just sitting on their bedstand and they're really struggling with it, Inspire might be the right choice for you, and it's absolutely worth getting checked out.
And a texter writes, my AHI is staying above 5. How can I get it down? And first explain what an AHI is, please.
AHI stands for apnea hypopnea index. And basically, it's the number we use to know how well-controlled your sleep apnea is. It's kind of like you're familiar with your blood pressure numbers or your pulse numbers.
Mm-hmm.
This is the number of breathing events per hour that you're having. In general, for adults, a normal number is less than 5. Although as we get a little bit older, perhaps in our more senior years, a normal can climb to even be about 10. And so you'd have to put it in context a little bit with age and what's going on. But what the writer is suggesting is that their sleep apnea is slightly undertreated. And then the real question is why. So sometimes maybe your pressure needs to be tweaked. Sometimes maybe your mask isn't fitting quite right and you're not getting that airtight seal. The other thing is there are other non-obstructive apnea events. So whenever someone falls asleep, it's normal to have an apnea. That's a totally normal thing to do for all of us. But someone who's got really broken up sleep, like they injure their back and they keep waking up all night with back pain, their AHI might climb just because they keep waking up and going back to sleep from pain. So the bottom line is it requires an evaluation to answer that question specifically. So I would encourage her to see your sleep provider.
All right. It is 7:30 on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones, Josh Wheeler at the helm. Dr. Andrew Steam is our guest. With Alina Health, and we're talking about sleep, we seem to have gone down that road, and that's perfectly fine because many people have questions about sleep. So we'll take this break, do some weather for you, and be back right after this. And we're back with the second half of Your Health, Head to Toe, 7:34. Dr. Andrew Steam is our guest from Alina Health, talking all things sleep-related, 651-461-9226. A lot of questions coming in, as you might expect. A couple questions about medication. I am on Mirapex and gabapentin for restless leg. If I don't take the Mirapex, I don't settle down to sleep. Are there any new promising medications out there for restless leg?
The 50% of people with restless legs, their primary problem is actually low iron. And the newer data that we're getting really tells us how important iron is for people that have trouble with restless legs. And the problem with it is that we can really measure blood iron very reliably. That's a simple blood test. But brain iron, which is what's tied to restless legs, is very hard to measure. And so there really is a tendency to push iron aggressively on folks with this problem, just as long as they're not getting too much. There are consequences to getting too much iron. But that would be the first thing I would tell that person to do, is make sure that their iron levels have been checked and that if there's room, they should be taking an iron supplement as well.
Someone asked that as well about getting an iron infusion and how that might play a role in helping the situation.
And that's exactly how. The oral iron particularly that we take is hard. The gut doesn't absorb iron very quickly, so you can't just take one big pill of iron. You have to tend to take multiple doses of iron, and it can be very upsetting to the stomach when you try to do that. So there are some people that they just can't take oral iron. Plus, it also looks like the IV iron really does get into the brain better than oral iron does. And again, it's the brain iron levels that's the one that is responsible for restless legs.
And is this the Ropinrol, R-O-P-I-N-R-O-L-E?
No, Ropinrol is one of the older medicines used to treat restless legs. It basically increases dopamine levels to try to improve that sensation.
Okay. Now, the next text says, is the home sleep test as effective as the one in a sleep clinic?
for the vast preponderance of people when the question is sleep apnea. So the home tests only look at breathing. For the most part, they don't even look at whether you're asleep or not. They just know it's nighttime, so you should be asleep. But some have surrogates for sleep. But when you're looking for breathing disorders while you're asleep, it's about an 85% test. So it's not as good as the formal sleep study. It only looks at breathing, but it does that with about 85% detection rates for sleep apnea.
A texter writes, I have tried the cognitive sleep therapy for 10 weeks and I have not yet seen any improvements. Is that typical?
That's a little bit atypical, although it depends on how many visits it's been and whether it's done on your own. Some people will do it through their websites and books. Other times it's actually with the formal psychologist. What I will tell people is cognitive and behavioral therapy, usually for the first couple sessions, you get worse before you get better. It's kind of like if you started going to the gym. The first time you went to the gym, you're going to have a significant amount of discomfort the next day. And cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia is the same. So it's not uncommon for people to give up in the first or second session because they feel things are getting worse. But don't give up on the gym just because you ache on day two. That's actually, it's a healthy thing. You stick with it, and within a week or a month or two, you tend to get better and stronger. And the same thing is typically true for cognitive and behavioral therapy for insomnia. But if this person's put in four or five sessions and they feel like they're not getting better, that would be unusual.
Okay, and maybe it's time to talk about something else. 651-461-9226. I awake during the night. When I wake up, I place an earbud and listen to a podcast. I fall asleep, but the podcast goes on for several hours. Is this bad for my brain? That's kind of funny.
It may be bad for your ear. I'd be more worried about your ear than your brain. But the short answer is no. Your brain is not off at night, and I think that's a common misperception. And people probably know it. If a dog barked in the distance, your brain hears it and will wake up and address it. And so having stimuli being appreciated by your body, it knows where the edge of the bed is. It knows if the room is hot or cold. It knows if the person next to you kicked you. And so you are perceiving the world even when you're asleep. And so having some stimuli, even in your ear, isn't a problem for your sleep. Your brain is used to receiving information. Normally, just what happens when we're asleep is we don't record it. So there's no memory of what occurred, but we're still perceiving the world.
651-461-9226. If you have a question for Andrew Steam, Dr. Andrew Steam, a pulmonary and sleep medicine specialist with interest in sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg syndrome with Allina Health. And we've invited you, as always, to be part of the show, 651-461-9226. A texter says, ask about oral appliances for OSA. First, tell us what OSA is.
That's obstructive sleep apnea.
Got it. Thank you. Yep. Go ahead.
So the oral appliances are another good plan B for people that can't do CPAP, particularly for the more moderate or severe sleep apnea. And they might be a complete replacement for CPAP for mild sleep apnea. But what they are, most of them, are a device like a retainer that goes in the mouth. And so there's a top part and a bottom part, usually two different pieces, that pushes your lower jaw forward while you sleep. Gives you a little bit of an underbite while you sleep. And the intent is to, because your tongue is attached to your lower jaw, the intent is to push your tongue forward while you sleep, usually just about 2 to 3 or 4 millimeters. And by moving the tongue, those 2 or 3, 4 millimeters forward, there's more space behind the tongue so that air can keep moving in and out to treat sleep apnea. And so for many people, it's about a 50% improvement in their sleep apnea relative to what a CPAP could do. And so, again, and more comfortable. You're not wearing a mask, you're not having air blown at you, and you're basically just wearing a retainer at night to treat your sleep apnea. So it's more comfortable. It's about 80 or 90% of folks that are still able to use it 5 years later. So it's a very comfortable long-term therapy for many people.
A texter writes, is peripheral neuropathy similar to restless leg, and is there any help for it on the discomfort of it?
There's a significant overlap between restless legs and peripheral neuropathy. They tend to live together very commonly. A peripheral neuropathy tends to be kind of a pins and needles sensations, often what we call a stocking glove distribution, so stocking, sock, and mittens, kind of, so that the ends of the feet and the hands are kind of numb and tingly for some people, and that can be quite uncomfortable. Restless legs is usually more described as an urge to move. So neuropathy is kind of pins and needles tingly, and restless legs is more an urge to move. So the urge to move tends to be treated with different types of medicines than the numbness and pins and needles and tingly sensation. And so an important description of what you're experiencing is important because we have treatments for both.
That's interesting. 651-461-9226, a texter writes, is it possible for a five-year-old to be a natural night owl, can't fall asleep until 11 or later?
It is possible. It's about 6% of us that are biologically night people. And there's about 2% of us that are biologically morning people, and then the rest of us tend to fall into that normal kind of sleep distribution. However, there's also a significant behavioral component. And so in general, there's a tendency now for many of us to be a little bit more nighttime oriented because we have light later in the day, because we have activities later in the day like television and sports and other things that we do. Then we tend to sacrifice a little bit of our sleep for recreation, and we're pushing ourselves later into the evening. And so it's possible that this five-year-old is biologically a night person. It's also possible that they live in a household with more light, more stimulation later in the evening, and that's part of what's keeping them up later.
Yeah, or, I know I have friends that have had kids that have stayed up later, and I think it's just almost the parents have a later night schedule themselves, and it seems to just sort of be this sense. They're older now, but I was always like, you don't put them to bed at 7:30. I live for 7:30.
I tend to go to bed earlier myself. I'm right there with you. Okay, but sometimes it's the household and sometimes it's the genetics. It can be hard to tease the two out.
Texter writes, my apnea is worse when I sleep on one side than the other. Is that common? And it is well controlled with CPAP?
The typically for most people, the back is the worst position. So when you're lying on your back, your jaw gets pulled down, which pulls the tongue back and tends to narrow the throat and cause more apnea. And so the sides are usually better than the back. And so it'd be a little bit unusual to say I have more on my right side than my left side. That would be a little bit unusual. But to say I have more on my back than my sides, that's very typical.
Texter writes, I have pulmonary artery disease as well as being treated for lymphedema. I don't wear my apnea mask because of the discomfort. Can you talk about that?
Certainly. The pulmonary artery hypertension, I presume, is what they're referencing, is a disease of high blood pressure within the lungs. So most of us are familiar with high blood pressure, the kind they measure with that cuff on the arm, but there's also high blood pressure in the lungs. A very typical contributing problem is low oxygen. So if you're having low oxygen, that raises the blood pressure in the lungs. And so having untreated sleep apnea, because it's causing low nighttime oxygen levels, can worsen your pulmonary arterial hypertension. And so I would encourage you strongly to get it treated. That can be a very dangerous disease for some people to have pulmonary arterial hypertension. And remind you, there are things besides CPAP that can be done. So just it's one out of three people that can't do CPAP long-term. That's very common. And we see it a lot. And I think that's one of the most important take-home messages is there's a lot of Plan Bs. A decade ago, we really only had the oral appliance that we talked about earlier. There was CPAP and the oral appliance. And nowadays, we've got a lot of alternative therapies for people that can't do one or the other. We already talked about the Inspire. The FDA just approved one of the injectable medicine to treat sleep apnea that can be a cure for many people with sleep apnea. It's a once-a-week shot you take at home that can cure you of sleep apnea. Probably coming in 2026 is another medicine that can be treating sleep apnea that improves the airway tone of the muscles of the upper airway. There are position therapies that we talked about keeping you off your back when you sleep. But, there's a lot that we can do. And so I would encourage you, even if CPAP's not for you, something should be for you. So come in and talk about something else.
And you say sleep apnea. Are we seeing more and more people getting it? Is it the kind of thing that we're studying more and looking at it as it continues to be a bigger and bigger problem?
Absolutely. There's an estimate that about 80% of cases of sleep apnea are, as of yet, undiagnosed. And that's very common. I mean, how common is snoring? And people dismiss their snoring partner. And how common is feeling a little bit tired? And so we dismiss these two symptoms that are typical of sleep apnea. Or we're afraid to find out we have it, and I have to wear one of those darn masks. And so I don't even want to go in to talk about it because I don't want to wear one of those things. So people will avoid the doctors. They'll dismiss their symptoms. And I would encourage you heartily not to do that. It is very treatable. There are multiple other treatment options, and it can significantly improve your quality of life by treating your sleep apnea.
We'll squeeze this one in and take our last break. A texter, a person called and didn't want to ask it on the air. What is a modern alternative to the outdated ropinirole? You said, say that name again.
Ropinirole.
Ropinirole, I had it right.
Yep.
Oh, is there a modern alternative to that?
There's a newer medicine in the same family called rotigotine, which is a patch. But that's a family of medicines that we call dopaminergic therapies. Then there's another family of therapies, the prototype of which is a medicine called gabapentin, mm-hmm. which works an entirely different way to treat restless legs. Then there's iron therapy, and those are very commonly our first-line therapies, kind of those three, although the order's changed recently. It used to be ropinirole was kind of our preferred medicine of choice or some of its sister medications, and now it's no longer our preferred medication. And so there are newer guidelines. There are alternative medicines, and iron, I can't underestimate or impress upon you how important it is to make sure that your iron is okay when you have restless legs. But then even beyond that, there are other therapies for particularly nasty cases as well. So the short answer is yes, there are other medicines that we can use to treat that besides ropinirole.
All right. It is 7:49 on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones along with Josh Wheeler, our doctor this week, Dr. Andrew Steen with Alina Health, talking sleep, apnea, restless leg, narcolepsy, anything that falls into that purview of sleep. We'll get to a couple more questions right after this last break on News Talk 830-WCCO. And we are back with the final segment. It is 7:54. We have about 5 minutes left together, 4 minutes. We have Dr. Andrew Steen with Alina Health on our John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. He is a pulmonary and sleep medicine specialist talking about sleep apnea, narcolepsy, and restless leg for, again, Alina. And we've invited your calls and texts at 651-461-9226. A texter writes this morning, can acid reflux make OSA worse?
The usually sleep apnea makes the acid reflux worse. And so you can imagine if I'm having difficulty sucking air in, I'm trying harder to suck, and I can actually suck acid up instead of sucking air down. Mm. And the two tend to very much live in kind of the same world. The other is acid reflux is worse when you lie down. Mm. And so it's not people with sleep apnea in bed, it's not uncommon to have both.
All right. Before we run out of time, I know we could talk about sleep forever. I do want to mention the air quality alert yet again, another stretch of couple of days. Does this concern you as a pulmonary doctor?
Absolutely. The number of patients we have calling in or complaining of difficult summers or more shortness of breath or cough is real. Every day I'm seeing people who've had a difficult stretch because of the poor air quality. The take-home messages are try to avoid being outside for extended stretches today. Try to avoid exercising outside today. When you're exercising, you're breathing deeper, you're breathing more, so you're getting more of the stuff into you. And if you're going to go out early before the air quality index starts to really climb and get worse and get into that red zone.
And I do have to say, do we have any sense about the long-term effects of this if this continues to be a trend each and every summer?
It really does feel like that's been the case last couple of years, that we've been dealing with this a lot. We have the best marker from urban settings, where you have a lot more smog and ground-level air quality issues, and it certainly does increase risks of cardiovascular disease, cancers, emphysema, and lung damage. And so we do see that repetitive long-term exposure can have negative health consequences. I hope that doesn't become a growing trend to Minnesota. The last 10 years feels worse than any 10 years I ever had as a kid growing up.
That's right. And really not much to do about it, as you say, other than sort of limit your time outdoors, which is sort of sad.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, we appreciate your time. Any final thoughts as we wrap up this hour? I know a lot of good questions. Your advice perhaps to everyone with questions about sleep?
Ask your healthcare provider. Alina Health has multiple resources, as I'm sure does every healthcare provider, to help you get a good night's sleep. It's so important. It's one third of your life. Get a good night's sleep.
All right, doctor. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too, Dr. Anders Steem, Alina Health sleep specialist, with us on WCCO.